This is recording is being made by Patricia Robinson, committee member of the Rowlands Castle Historical Society. The interviewee is Graham Griffith, who came to live in Rowlands Castle later in his life for work. The purpose of making this recording is for archiving the history of Rowlands Castle. The date of this recording is the 27th of February 2022. Reference 22/2. Welcome, Graham. Would you like to tell us how and when you came to live in Rowlands Castle?
My name is Graham Griffiths, presently aged 76, arrived in Rowlands Castle in the year of 1978, along with my wife and two sons. My wife and I were both born in the city of Worcester, where we lived for our early years before we met up, were married, and moved down to Rowlands Castle to take on the village sub-post office. All of these details are on previous recordings that I've made. And I hope that people will have a listen in on those, because I think they're interesting comments that have been made, which, as I say, I hope people will just listen to. I've been asked for, on this occasion, to talk about primarily the big storm that appeared in Rowlands Castle in October of 78. This was the famous one where Michael Fish said nothing was untoward until that particular evening, which was Thursday the 15th overnight to Friday 16th of October, when we were hit by winds exceeding enormously over 100 miles per hour. Those winds caused tremendous devastation across the south of England, and Rowlands Castle also suffered considerably. Yeah, my recollections of that evening are still very vivid. My wife and I had finished our day's work in the post office. We had retired upstairs to go to bed, but finding it difficult to sleep because of the high winds, and we did try, but we were very disturbed during the middle of the night, and obviously very concerned as to any damage that may be caused. And whilst we were looking out of the front window of the old post office, which is at this moment in time the property next door to the veterinary surgeons, we looked directly over to the entrance of Deerleap, which was confined by a very long flint wall, and the other side of that flint wall were large, mature oaks. Those trees had been a part of the reasons we moved as well, because it was just a beautiful sight. However, this night, my wife and I, standing looking in the window, we would hear a creaking sound followed by a very dull explosion, and the tree, or a tree, came right through the flint wall, smashing the flint wall to smithereens. The tree ended up across the roadway of the village green, stretching out onto the village green itself. And this happened a number of times. So we would hear a creak, an explosion, the flint wall then disintegrated, and a number of trees came down across the village green. That went on throughout the night for all around the area. We did finally manage to get to sleep, Upon waking in the morning, we went to check how our son had managed with this, and he knew absolutely nothing about it. He'd slept right the way through all the noise and commotion that had taken place.
How old was he?
He was about 12 at the time. My eldest son was away at University Cardiff. And so the following morning, I got up at the usual time for receiving a mail at 4:30. But of course, no one was going to get into Roland's Castle because of the trees being all over the roads. So I decided to walk. We had a postman who lived where presently the doctor's surgery is. And I thought, well, I'll walk down there and tell him not to bother to come in today. So I went outside, and in so doing, I was walking into such a strong wind, I was almost at 45 degrees and still having to force my way through it, eventually getting to him and letting him know he wasn't required for duty that day. And of course, I then rang Havant, who would send out other postmen to us to find out what they were going to do. But of course, mail deliveries were cancelled for that period and until such times as the roads were cleared. On clearing the roads, well, that took a little while because, the number of trees that came through the flint wall created barriers all the way down the one side of the green. And fortunately, the owner of Deerleap at that time was someone who had something to do with building, construction, etc. And he brought out some equipment, diggers and things like this, to help remove those trees. And they were out there with chainsaws, etc., working on these. It took them, I don't know how long it took, maybe 2-3 days. But of course, even when they cleared all that, then the flint walls, well, so many sections had just disappeared. And those obviously were going to have to be rebuilt. And eventually they were. And probably now you cannot see where that has taken place. The repairs were done by a company, I think it was by the name of Cousins from over West Marden, and they did an absolutely wonderful job returning the conservation area to something like it used to be. One of the trees that came down, and which is by where the bus shelter is today, came down and crashed onto what was a copper beech tree and took out half of the copper beech tree. And at that time, it didn't look very pretty. And I was, later on, I was on the parish council, and it was a case of, what are we going to do with that tree? After all the others had been cleared, it was a case of, what are we going to do with this copper beech tree? Because it didn't look very nice with only half a tree. There was a discussion, should we get rid of it and plant another one in its place? In the end, there was a gentleman on there by the name, it's gone. The gentleman's name was Jack Levitt. He lived in Finchdean, and he was someone who had been a gardener for many years, and he took a great deal of interest in all sorts of plants, etc. And he said to the parish council, leave the tree alone, it will recover. And today, if you look at that tree, he was absolutely right. That tree has recovered. You would not know it had been devastated, half of it missing from that storm. And so we were most grateful to him for his input. The rest of the village, as I say, we could walk around the village and view the devastation again. I know I went down Finchdene Road when I could get down there. Again, very difficult. You had to clamber over these fallen trees. The miraculous one was that the castle pub had a tree fall either side of it. Divine or not, I don't know. But this was, the castle escaped miraculously. As I say, two huge trees. There are photographs of all this, and they will be published, I understand, on the historical site. And that was a sight to see. Woodbury Lane also suffered with trees across. We went for a walk up into Stanstead Forest, and the trees up there, the huge trees, just snapped in half. It wasn't a case of some of them, yes, there were a lot uprooted, but some of them were just snapped in half. It was, as I said, the devastation was just tremendous. That was my recollections of the great storm. There may be others that will come out later, but I would like to go back to the parish council, if I may. I served, I think it was approximately 12 years on the parish council. And again, there are memories, but some I can, some I can't reveal. One thing we will, the group I was with, will be remembered for is the millennium. When we came to the millennium, or the run up to the millennium, 1999, and it's a bit like when I'm talking now, we are talking about the Platinum Jubilee, what can be done to commemorate that. We had the same situation in 1999. What can we commemorate? The millennium. And we thought of various ideas, but the one that proved to be the most popular and the one that did take place was the clock in the church on the end of the green. That clock that is there today was the millennium clock, which was donated by the parish so that that would, as I say, commemorate the millennium year. And I guess people just go by every day now, look at the clock and don't know how it came about. But that is the latest thing that was put on the building via the parish council. That again came about through the usual discussions on there. Other things that we managed to arrange, we've always had parking issues within the village, even greater today. But whilst on the parish council, myself and again Jack Levitt proposed an idea for what we call passing bays along the village green. And this was to put white lines down there so that spaces would be created and vehicles would be able to pass by those that were parked. At the time, East Hants District Council were a bit wary of the idea, took a bit of persuading, but eventually that did take place. Those bays are still there now, and without those, it would be gridlock. So another one we feel was a success. So that's about it for Parish Council, I think. Whilst having served on the Parish Council, I've also made use of the Parish Hall. I've enjoyed times up there for, we held, dances, get together. There were, I've played badminton in that hall. The only problem with the playing badminton in the hall were there were bars across the ceilings, and the shuttlecock would hit this every so often, so it interfered with the game, but nevertheless, it was very enjoyable. I once, in fact, represented the parish in a sports day up at Alton, where they held almost like Olympic Games for parishes within Hampshire or East Hants. And I represented Rowlands Castle for table tennis and won the competition. That's my greatest achievement for Rowlands Castle. And
what sort of year that
might have been? No, the year totally escapes me on that.
You're still working then, weren't you?
Yes, still working then, yeah. And I did mention dances. One of the dances, of course, on a few occasions were barn dances. There was one many years ago, not long after we arrived, held in an actual barn at the top of Bowes Hill. And that, I think, we attended a couple of times. Thereafter, they moved down into the parish hall. I've also been involved in the sporting side within the village. I've mentioned on my previous interviews regarding cricket, etc. And we tried to organise sort of get-togethers for the cricket team, and we held a Boxing Day football match with Rowlands Castle Football Club. We also incorporated that with a fancy dress. We've used the three pubs within the village at various times for our after-match drinks and socials. I can remember we were at the Robin Hood and in an upstairs room playing indoor bowls. The owner then was a Mr. and Mrs. Cruden, and they were good supporters of the village team. In fact, the son-in-law, David, moved on to West Meon, where there is a pub over there called the Thomas Lord. And I don't know whether it's still there, but the Rowlands Castle Cricket Club donated a bat with all the signatures of the team and everyone involved with the team, which was, and we went over there at one time and saw it hung in the Thomas Lord. I'd like to make one alteration to part of the recording where, to do with the great storm, I may have said 1978, when in fact the storm was in 1987. Dyslexia, I don't know whether that's kicking in now, a bit late. Anyway, the village fair took place, obviously. It was always the first Saturday in July. That was changed later on because it always interfered with the Wimbledon tennis finals. So the dates were moved to avoid the Wimbledon tennis finals. But the village fair days were just wonderful. Everyone turned out. Efforts were put into this in all ways. I can remember both my children were involved in different ways. My youngest son, I don't know whether he'll be happy with this, but his mom used to dress him up in all sorts of outfits to take part in this. I can remember one year he went as a packet of Polo mints. Another year he went as a packet of Smith's crisps. Another year he went along as an OXO cube. So I do have photos of those, but whether he would be too happy in those being seen, I'm not so sure these days. My oldest son, he used to get out on the village green, and they had all these different stalls, and there was one particular one where they had tin cans that went up in like a pyramid shape, and then they gave him like a bean cushion type thing, just handheld, which you threw at these cans, and if you managed to knock them down, you would win a tin of pop, lemonade. Yeah, so yeah,
What?
pop. That's going back. Anyway, he was extremely good at this, and he used to come home with his arms folded across his chest with tins of lemonade and various other drinks, and deposit them back in his room, and then go out and win some more. I'm not sure whether he got himself banned or not, but yeah, that was his contribution to the village fair. I think I've said on my previous talk that yes, I was involved as Postman Pat, and that was when I borrowed the full outfit. Plus, we also had the motor from the post office at that time because they had the rights to the Postman Pat uniform and everything else, and so I managed to persuade them to let me borrow it this one year. And extremely warm day, and yeah, it was the size of the head was massive, and it was very, very hot under that. I can remember coming out, my head was covered with sweat, and yeah, terrible.
Can you remember any date of the
No, the
approximately?
date again escapes me. As I say, there are photos at home with this recorded, but I can't remember whether the date would be there. There has been a subsequent Postman Pat imposter out there. So yes, the character has been played a few times, I think, on the Village Green. But as I say, always extremely well attended, and this hopefully will continue, well, forever. It's just a wonderful event for the whole village to get together. This brings in the community, and that's what Rowlands Castle, I find, is all about. Has been, and I hope will continue to be. The friendships that are formed within the village, as I say, build and maintain that community, and long may that continue. Throughout these talks, I've not mentioned very much the part that my wife played. Without her, obviously, I could not have run the post office. When I had to attend the palace in London, she would take over from me and did the day-to-day running and looking after the postman, etc. And as I say, I'd have to pay a tribute to my late wife, who I lost 4 years ago last Thursday. And as I say, the memories are still there. And some of those are, again, going back to the village fair day, she would take part in mostly the baking side of things. She would do cakes, sponge, fruit, but her best one was shortbreads. And she was absolutely wonderful at making shortbreads. She won first prize on a couple of occasions for those. We also once won first prize for best back garden when Brian Kidd judged the gardens within the village. We had moved into a new property at the rear of the post office, and we'd done some footpaths and different levels, etc. We'd even used runner beans as part of the decoration within the garden, and Brian Kidd was absolutely amazed by it, and we got first prize for that. My wife also was a part of a singing group. It was the Sweet Adeline's Barbershop Singing Group. And there were one or two others from within the village who took part in this. Kath Malloy of Castle Road, is Jan Baker down Finchdean Road is another one. And as I say, she spent, I think, about 20 years taking part in various singing competitions, visiting various places throughout the country. And they had what they called singing conventions, where they competed against other groups. She even went off to Amsterdam the one year, and went over there, and as I say, I don't think they ever actually won. I think they had a couple of second places, something like this, but this was my wife's main interest, and she thoroughly enjoyed that as well.
Thank you very much.
No, you're welcome.